Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU and 88.5 WMUB. I'm Mark Purcell. Well, March is National Women's History Month, and a fantastic book has been released that really shines a light on some very trailblazing females. The two females, Nellie Bly and Elizabeth Bislin, what did they do? Well, they traveled around the world in less than 80 days. Matthew Goodman chronicles their adventure in his new book, 80 Days, Nellie Bly and Elizabeth Bislin's History-Making Race Around the World. And he's here on the phone this morning on Cincinnati Edition to talk about the story. Good morning, Matthew.
Good morning, Mark. Thanks so much for having me. I'm delighted to be with you.
First of all, let's distinguish Nellie Bly. The song from Stephen Foster, Nellie Bly, is not the Nellie Bly that we have here. The song came first, correct?
That is correct. Nellie Bly was a journalist, a really remarkable journalist of the late 19th century. She was an investigative reporter for Joseph Pulitzer's newspaper, The World. This was at a time when most female journalists were relegated to writing about recipes and shopping on the women's page of the papers. Nellie Bly was an undercover reporter. She went, she feigned madness so that she could get herself committed to a female lunatic asylum so that she could experience firsthand the horrible conditions endured by the patients there, and so that she could then write about it and expose those conditions. She pretended to be a young mother so she could sell her baby, to see if she could sell a baby on the black market. She would expose lobbyists, expose medical dispensaries for the poor and the horrible way they treated the poor. That was the kind of amazing work that she did. But Nellie Bly wasn't her real name. Her real name was Elizabeth Cochran, but when she got her first job on a newspaper as a very young woman in her early 20s, you know, women back then, it was considered improper for a woman to write under her own name for a newspaper, and so they had to find a new name for her. And as her article was about to be set into type, her first article, a copy boy came by singing this Stephen Foster song, Nellie Bly, Nellie Bly, and that's how she got her name. After that, she was always known as Nellie Bly.
She was quite a pioneering young woman in journalism, and set the stage. You talk a lot about Park Row there in New York City and how all the great newspaper headquarters were side by side and always competitive, and there was the truth was not always the point of this journalism that was going on.
Well, you know, Nellie Bly worked for Joseph Pulitzer for The World, which was the largest, the most widely read of New York's papers. But there were, at the time, I believe it was 11 daily newspapers in New York. It may have been even more than that, but at least 11, as I recall. And they were tremendously competitive, and they were always looking for an edge. Pulitzer had been publisher of The World by this point for 5 or 6 years. Among his achievements was that he almost single-handedly raised the money to build the pedestal for the Statue of Liberty to be put in New York Harbor. The U.S. Congress refused to allocate the money to build the pedestal for the statue. And it was only through Pulitzer's campaign to raise the money that the money came in, from pennies and nickels and dimes sent in by the immigrant readers of The World, that's what it was that allowed the statue to be placed out in New York Harbor. But by 1889, The World circulation had begun to dip a little bit, and they were looking for an injection of publicity. A year earlier, Nellie Bly had gone to her editors and suggested, I would like to race around the world. I want to go by myself, unescorted, unchaperoned by a man, around the world, and I want to see if I can go faster than the 80 days set by this fictional character Phileas Fogg in Jules Verne's novel Around the World in 80 Days. Well, of course, initially, the male editor said, no, absolutely not. Only a man can do this. This was a time when male editors didn't even want to send their female reporters across the city unchaperoned by a man, much less around the world. But, you know, when the circulation began to go down, they saw the chance for a publicity boost, and they called Nellie Bly up, and they said, you can do it. You can go around the world. And on November 14th, 1889, by herself, speaking only English, carrying all of her possessions for an around-the-world trip in one little handbag, Nellie Bly set off from New Jersey to try to beat the record.
She traveled around the world east. In the meantime, Elizabeth Bislin, working for the Cosmopolitan, started several hours after her, but going west. How did Elizabeth Bislin get into this history-making race?
Right. This was one of the things that I discovered, which I found so astonishing and so captivating. On the very morning that Nellie Bly set out, thinking that she was the only person who was going to be doing this, heading east across the Atlantic on a steamship, that evening, a young female journalist from a rival newspaper by the name of Elizabeth Bislin set out west by New York Central Railroad, heading to San Francisco, trying to beat Nellie Bly. What had happened was that Bislin's publisher, a man by the name of John Brisbane Walker, had read in The World that morning the front-page article trumpeting Bly's attempt to do this, because The World, of course, was using this as a publicity stunt. And he realized the great publicity value inherent in such a scheme, and he said, let's get our own young female reporter to beat Nellie Bly. So he sent for his literary editor, this young, very beautiful, erudite literary poet by the name of Elizabeth Bislin, who had come originally from a ruined Louisiana sugarcane plantation, had come to New York with only $50 in her pocket to make her way in the male-dominated world of New York journalism. And he called to his office, and he bade her a good morning, and he said, now this evening I would like you to be on a New York Central Railroad train heading for San Francisco. And from there I would like you to proceed around the world, and if at all possible, I'd like you to do this faster than anyone has ever done this before in history. Bislin, of course, said no. She didn't want to do it. But you know, Walker was a very persuasive fellow, and that evening at 6 o'clock, Bislin found herself on a railroad train heading west to San Francisco and would not be returning home for 2.5 months.
It's amazing as you trace the travels of these women. I can just imagine all the research that you needed to do. But to really capture what they were, the environment they were working with, both as women in journalism and then really looking at the shape of the world there. In the late 19th century, just a fascinating bit of insight into a world that was changing fast with these steamships and steam locomotives rushing people around the world.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things that I found so wonderful about this story was not only that the race itself was so exciting. You know, the race was neck and neck right up to the very end. And, of course, they're going through all of these wonderful locations that are just, you know, so terrific for a writer, you know, to be able to be describing, you know, a moonlit sail down the Suez Canal, or, you know, a rickshaw ride through the crowded streets of Hong Kong or Canton, or, you know, a railroad train barreling through the French Alps, or a snowshoe expedition through the Sierra Nevada mountains blockaded by 20 feet of snow. You know, it was all just wonderful for me as a writer to be able to describe all of these exotic locations to which they go. But even beyond that, and, of course, Bly and Bislin themselves were such fascinating women, you know, both equally remarkable, very different in terms of their personalities, but equally remarkable. But then the fact is that the race itself provides such a window into the world of the time. And so it's possible through the medium of the race to talk about, you know, the changing social roles of women in the late 19th century, as symbolized by these two young women, you know, to talk about the growth of technology. You know, they were sending messages back from around the world by telegram, this, you know, great new invention that was like the internet of its time. You know, it blew people's minds that you could be in Hong Kong and send a message back to New York that would get there in 5 minutes. People couldn't believe it. Before that, you would have to write a letter and it would take weeks. The growth of the British Empire and the U.S. challenge to the empire, you know, colonialism, all of these issues, the growth of the railroads, all of these issues, you know, emerge naturally from the story of the race itself.
Well, it's quite a ride that you take us on, Matthew Goodman, on your new book, 80 Days, quite a look into the world as it was and how the world became to be what it is today. But I wish I could talk a lot longer, but thank you for your time this morning.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Matthew Goodman, the author of 80 Days, Nellie Bly and Elizabeth Bislin's History-Making Race Around the World. We have just covered a little bit of the fascinating tale, these two amazing women. You can find 80 Days where books are sold, or visit WVXU.org and find a link there to learn more about Nellie Bly and Matthew Goodman, Elizabeth Bislin, and all at WVXU.org.